Hey, welcome to another Thursday edition of Sports Look. Good to have you along with us, and good to have our Sports Look sponsors, Gerber Electric and Mueller's Locker Room, Exchange Bank, Skyway Vapes, and Taco John's. Gus Counts to my left, Tom Counts with you, and we always talk about the upcoming sports schedule. And Gus, there actually is, here in the middle of March, still an upcoming sports schedule on Q-Radio, because who saw this coming? We've got Benedictine football coming up here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and, you know, we've got a kind of a TBA football schedule, right? We're going to have the game April 10th.
Yes.
And then past that, we hope for more football, but, yeah, it's that kind of time. We'll talk about it a little bit in segment three that it's college football time in some places.
In some places. You know what? I think it's a good time to sit back here and reflect. We're going to look at, as by the way, it's probably important for us to list that for all of our good listeners, this is the final episode of the season. We began this thing back in August, and we'll be back again in August. But as the seasons have kind of come and gone and drawn to a close, we look back and reflect, and we will forever. I mean, you remember where you were when big events happened. We talk about this all the time. Huge landmark moments. You can tell everyone exactly where you were. You're going to remember the 2020 and certainly 2021 football and basketball and sports seasons because of the very different way that they were taken care of and were played. And you're always going to remember where you were this year.
Yeah. I mean, because you think back to about a year ago, a little over a year ago now, you kind of remember where we were, and we were like right here in this studio when the word started coming out that there were whispers that the high school basketball tournament was going to end. Right? And then there was going to be, as a lot of people around the state have dubbed it, the Forever Four. Right? The last four teams, nobody really knew who was going to win a state title. Those were just the teams that were just there. And so at that point, you, no matter how optimistic you were, you probably had a bleak outlook on what the following season sports events were going to look like. Right?
Yep.
I mean, and so as we started football season, I mean, you wanted to be optimistic that things were going to go well, but you just didn't know. Like, schools were starting to get back in session. You know, the Kansas City Atchison League kind of had some issues because a lot of the Kansas City schools didn't play. So quickly, Atchison was jumping around and trying to find teams. I mean, we went to St. Joe for the first football game of the year. So, you know, I think when you look back on it, you think, when we started, it was just a matter of how many do we get in before this thing ends. And then by the time we got to the end of the year, you were just like thrilled that we made it to that point.
Yeah, and we're going to look back at this year not only for just the wins and the losses, but you're going to look back at this year as a year of perseverance, a year of overcoming incredible obstacles that had never been heard of or dreamed of or considered ever before, with pandemic issues and schools rescheduling and schools working together to come up, you know, with opponents to play, you know, when their teams were available to play. And I tell you what, it was an incredible universal spirit of cooperation.
Did you ever think you would see social media on a Tuesday help to determine a game for Friday night?
No. How many times do you see a coach said, hey, we've got an open date in 2 days. Anybody want to play Friday? We'll travel.
Yeah, we'll travel. We'll figure out whatever you want. And so I think, yeah, it was a trying time for a lot of the schools, the coaches, because sometimes you were going into a week not really knowing who your opponent was, or you got halfway through the week and then your opponent called up and said, by the way, we're not able to play, and now you're maybe looking for an opponent, or you've got an unexpected off week. Hats off to those administrators, right? I mean, that this year has just kind of been a nightmare for a lot of those people, because not only is it finding a game to play, it's finding a venue, it's getting officials, it's getting all the pieces that come together to make a game happen, and that's, you know, hats off to them.
And sometimes the time frame, particularly as we shifted into basketball season, you know, we have multiple games in the course of a week, we were finding ourselves with our broadcast schedule in the morning thinking we're going to be over here, and then by the afternoon thinking, oh, that fell through, so we're going to go over here. And then by the middle of the afternoon, it's like, that one fell through, we're going to go over here. And we had changed game programming as many as three times in the same day, the day of the game.
Yeah, so when that master schedule comes out, and we kind of get everything figured out in October for basketball season, right? Usually you have a huge calendar, and you bust out the Sharpie, and you put down all your games, and when it's all said and done, you get like one day off a week, right? And that's usually Sunday. This year, you couldn't put things in Sharpie. You had to start putting them in pencil because, again, it then finally got to the point where here on Sportsbook, our upcoming schedule was, hey, we think it's going to be this, but just tune in, listen, keep your ears open because things change in the blink of an eye and, you know, a lot of adjusting this year. But, again, it's one of those years that we're going to jump out and go, man, I remember that year and whatever take you had on it. I mean, you're just going to remember that year. I mean, look at the state tournament this year. It was completely different, and you kind of wonder if maybe that's a step into, you know, where Kasha starts to take the state tournaments from here on out.
You know, question about it. I mean, are the state tournaments going to become four-team tournaments? Are they going to do away forever with the third-place games? Are they going to have that play-in game after the sub-states, you know, forever? Are these just one-time changes? And I think that all of those are fair, legitimate questions, and I believe none of them have been decided at this point.
You know how, like, the NAIA tournament used to have at Municipal Auditorium, you'd go down and we'd start the day at, like, 8 a.m., right? Play basketball all day. Why couldn't you do that with the state tournament? Have all the guys at one site, all the ladies at one site, or you could do them all and just alternate the day and start. If you went down to the four teams, like we saw last year, it'd be kind of cool to be able to be at one site and see 6-1.
And, you know, that is, you know, that's not impossible.
You know, I mean, just finding the right venue for it would be one thing, but it would be kind of cool and something to look at. And those are the kind of things that you can do once you've narrowed the field to only four teams.
But anyway, 2020-2021, a challenging year, but yeah, a great year. We saw a lot of great performances. We saw a lot of superb teams, a lot of great individual efforts. And when it's all said and done, the resiliency is spectacular. And all of you fans have got to be very, very proud of you, as you mentioned earlier. Your players, your teams, your coaches, your administrators, your officials, everybody involved, tremendous job under the most difficult possible conditions. We're taking a break. We've got lots of stuff to talk about. Final sport look of the season returns right after this. Welcome back to Sports Look here on CARE Radio. Good to have you with us this evening. Tom Couts and Gus Couts. Gus, the NAIA women's college basketball season has come to an end. They crowned their champion. And I'll tell you what, good, just right off the top, good to see that tournament back where it belongs up in Sioux City, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's just it. When you get back to the Tyson Event Center, that's really where that thing was meant to be held. And you talk about people up there, it's just like going to Kansas City. At those sites, those people definitely know what they're doing, right? And it just feels like the tournament goes off so well, and it's a bigger city than you think. So there's plenty of, you know, hotel accommodations, food, things like that. And again, hats off to the people up there in Sioux City. They did it right. But we always talk when it comes to tournament time. Was there any reason to even play this tournament? Right? At the end of the day, one played two.
Yep. And when the confetti fell from the ceiling, it was Waldorf knocking off Thomas More as a 2-1.
Yeah. I mean, and you look at it, that Westmont team was just the best team on that side of the bracket. They blew through Clark, and Clark was a pretty good team this season. So I think Clark beat Mid-America, and you said, all right, Clark might have enough momentum. And then Westmont just mowed them over on their way to the title game and then coming away with the win over Thomas More out of Kentucky.
Yeah, but here's the thing, you've got to give Westmont a little props. And you've got to say that sometimes we talked about, you know, how the tournaments and last segment tournaments were canceled from last year. You got to give Westmont, like, you know, some props. Going into last year's canceled tournament, they were the number one team in the nation and the number one seed in the tournament. So what did they do? They said, we didn't get a chance to actually win that one. They came back the next year, put together a tremendous season, and then won it all.
Yeah, and especially playing out in California, which just wasn't easy. I mean, We've seen that with a lot of the teams this year. Just not getting a full schedule of games, so maybe they were a little more rested. But, again, I just chalk it up to, you know, you just didn't have a whole lot of a shot. So, hats off to them. And on the ladies' side, we talked about it. The very first night out when you got to the round of 16, Mid-America and Clark got matched up against each other. It was at 7 versus 10. We talked about it a lot last week. And when it was all said and done, Clark came away with a close win, but a win nonetheless over Mid-America. Got to that round of 8, but just were no match for Westmont.
Yeah, and so, again, sometimes you try to find little things to hang your hat on. And for Clark, they're going to say, well, you know, we did go out of the tournament, but we did go out at the hands of the national champion.
See, and now when you get into the second year or next year where all these people have their eligibility still, you kind of wonder about a team like Clark, how many of those seniors, because they were a very senior-heavy team. You know, do they get a Tina Ubel, Morgan Pitts? Do they get a McKenna Hosey back next year? Because if they do, then again, I mean, there's no reason to vote on the preseason conference, you know, number one team, and because it will be Clark. And again, you can't put a whole lot of stock into those preseason polls, but that's just kind of how that will work out.
Yep, no question about it. The conference felt like the 100-man athletic conference struggled a little bit in this tournament, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, what, you only had Clark and Mid-America making it to the round of 16. Benedictine lost in their first game. I feel like somebody else, Grandview, was in it too, and they lost in their first game. So, yeah, only getting two, I think, into the round of 16 was maybe a little frustrating for the conference. But, again, in the first year of combining Division II and Division I, you just never really know. How about Morningside? You talk about a team who went from Division II to Division I, and they really didn't struggle. They made it into that round of 4 and ended up losing to Thomas More out of Kentucky. But Morningside has adjusted to that Division I, and we've kind of known that. They've been a powerhouse in Division II for the last handful of years.
So all that said, putting them all together, at least let's start, we're talking about the ladies here in this segment. Did it make a difference? Was it tougher? Did we see Division II well represented, or is it just going to be something that they're going to have to grow into?
I mean, you're going to have your powers at the top that are going to, you know, like a Morningside. But when it's all said and done, I mean, Westmont was a Division I team last year. I believe Indiana Wesleyan, Campbellsville, Clark, you know, so most of these teams were Division I teams last season. So, again, I think it'll take a little bit of a transition. But I also think with the scholarships coming down and so going up for Division II, that'll help them quite a bit.
Well, I'll tell you what, it was a great season, and again, you know, the Benedictine women did not miss a game all year. Their schedule remained intact, and because of the things they did, they were able to keep that schedule constant. One of, what, maybe two in the whole conference that did not have to change a single date on the season. We're going to be back. We got more Sports Hook to bring you right after this. The NAIA National Tournament concluded in Kansas City just a couple of days ago. And Shawnee State out of Ohio, Gus, was just a dominant team throughout that tournament. They brought in so many great athletes and roared to a national title.
Roared, is that a bear thing? Because yeah. Aren't they the Bears?
Yeah.
You know, Shawnee State is one of those schools I always think of as a women's powerhouse, right? Because the Shawnee State ladies team is always in the national tournament. And for the guys, again, the ladies tournament, pretty well held to seed. We had a 1 versus a 2 in the title game. The guys blew up the first two nights of the tournament. Once you got to Kansas City, 1 went out, 2 went out, 4 went out right away. So the highest remaining seed was the number 3 seed, and I think Lewis and Clark State took advantage of being that, you know, higher seed, and they raced out of the bracket, the Naismith-Kramer portion. You had Shawnee State, the 5 seed. All of a sudden, they get a 13 seed in game 2. They were able to knock off Jamestown and move on to the semifinals. where they knocked off St. Francis. St. Francis, Indiana, was the 9 seed after having beat Benedictine. They snuck by Stillman, Alabama, 69-67. Then they knocked off the 16 seed Bethel, Indiana, 89-81, and then came up short, 5 points short to Shawnee State, who went on to win the whole thing. So, again, St. Francis, they were a good team.
St. Francis was a great team. There's no question about it. And, you know, they put one player, Cushing Berry, was on the all-tournament first team for St. Francis. We got to see him when we were down with Benedictine in Wichita at the first two rounds of games, and he was a very talented athlete, did a great job. And so Benedictine lost to a very quality team. And you talk about Benedictine, talk about the Heart of America Athletic Conference, we referred to it a little bit in the last segment. How about in this segment we talk about the fact that what happened to William Penn? I mean, I had them penciled into going a long, long, long way, and they stumbled out of the gate.
Yeah, you know, and we kind of were looking at those stats that night, and what was it? One of their best players didn't play, so not sure if he was injured, not sure if he didn't make the trip. I mean, 1,000 things could have happened there. Could have been a COVID issue. Either way, without speculating, William Penn came out. They struggled against Carroll, Montana, and Carroll dropped the beat down like USC the other night, right? Carroll winning 85-62 on William Penn. I'm sure John Henry can't remember the last time his team scored 62 points in a basketball game.
And that's like 50 less than they've been scoring.
Right.
Half of what they've been scoring.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about a team who has been getting into the hundreds pretty regularly, at least in the upper 90s, and then to only score 62 and have the brakes beat off of you by Carroll, Montana. And no, Carroll's a good team. They found themselves losing to Sagu in the quarterfinals as Southern Assemblies at 12-2 knocked off Carroll, Montana, 73-65, and then eventually lost to Lewis and Clark.
Okay, talking about the Heart of America Athletic Conference, didn't get many teams in, and they were not as successful as we thought they would be. What about that Frontier Conference? Not only did Carroll go all the way to the quarterfinals and lose, as you mentioned, now to Sagu, but fellow conference team, Lewis and Clark State, goes to the championship game. Is that Frontier, like, tougher than anybody thinks? Mountain there, make them play well?
Yeah, I mean, the Frontier is good, but you look at the crossroads. I mean, it had St. Francis, it had Indiana Wesleyan in there, you had Marion, Indiana, and I felt like there was a fourth team in there somewhere, so either way, you got at least three teams into the field of 16, and it also just goes to show you there's some pretty good conferences in the country this year.
No question about it, but with basketball behind us, then we shift our focus forward, and it is, we talked about it in the opening, we're going to have Benedictine football coming up, and it is spring football time in the NAIA. Here's what's going on. Ravens are going to be playing on Saturday. It is a scrimmage, okay? It's not a game. It will not be on K-Radio. NAI does not allow broadcast of scrimmages. That's not cool with them. So, and the attendance is going to be, you know, limited pretty much to family and coaching staffs and so forth. So really not looking for people to come up and watch them. But for them, it's going to be a little bit of preparation as they're going to have a game on the 10th. And that is going to be a real game. That's going to be a game that counts, and that's going to be a game. We're going to have spring football, baby, on Care Radio on the 10th. How good is that? April football? Never dreamed
of
doing that.
Never thought we would be having April football, but taking a look up and down, real quick, let's look over the top 25. For Benedictine in the newest top 25, they're right on the edge, right? They're sitting at 15 in the country at 7-2 overall. Their two losses came to now the number 2 team in the country, Grandview, and the number 8 team in the country, Baker. So, again, you can't tell me that they don't have a pretty good resume at this point. Heart of America has Grandview at 2, Baker at 8, Benedictine at 15, and no other Heart of America Athletic Conference team in the top 25. But you want to talk about a team who, or a conference who's done pretty well in the top 25? That's KCAC. Bethel is number 11 right now. You have Avila sneaking up three spots to number 20 at 6-1. You've got Southwestern down to 23 after a loss the other day, and Kansas Wesleyan in their receiving votes. So, again, Kansas Wesleyan, if you're receiving votes at this point in the game, you're probably in some trouble. But again, a lot of teams still playing ahead of you. You've got Marion and Indiana fell from 2-9, and that's what jumped Grandview up from 3-2.
Yep, and you also had St. Francis, Indiana, having lost, jumping all the way from 9-12. So, for the Ravens, though, having not played, they remain stationary at number 15, and you mentioned it at the onset there. We're on the razor's edge. 16 teams go to the tournament. You've got some guaranteed people that will get in. So, for Benedictine, this extra game and a win in this extra game probably is the difference maker for whether they go to the spring postseason.
Yeah, the one that kind of drives me a little batty right now is, and I'm happy that the National Pollsters did this, Kaiser went from 6.
I was just going to talk about them.
They jumped to 4, and I like that because I just don't feel like Kaiser at 7-0 should be punished because College of Idaho is 2-0.
Yes, see, and there we have it. There's a disparity. You've got teams like Morningside played 8 games. Northwestern Iowa has played 9. Bethel, Kansas has gotten in 9. Dickinson State has gotten in 9. Benedictine has gotten in 9 games. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's the outside. That's the most any teams have played. Then you've got College of Idaho, 2-0. You've got Marion, Indiana, normally a powerhouse at 3-1.
Now,
I mean, you've got Eastern Oregon at 1-0, and they're in the rankings.
Yeah. See, and some of that is that Crossroads Conference that we talked about. It is playing right now. So some of those will help even out, like the Concordia Michigans of the world at 4-0. Also in that conference, you've got Marion, Indiana at 3-1, St. Francis at 2-1. So that will shake itself out a little bit. And for the Ravens, they're kind of hoping that conference beats up on each other a little bit and two of those teams drop below you. You'll feel a lot better. But, you know,
the total points, though, for the Ravens, they are in 15th, but they are clinging. 2 points ahead of 16th and less than 10 points ahead of 20th.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they have no sneeze room.
Yeah, and the thing is, you have the KCAC playing a handful of games this spring, so there's a team like Avila who's come from 23-20 right now, and again, I just see them going to keep climbing at this point, and so you need some of these teams ahead of you to fall, but like a team such as Baker, 6-0, right? I have a problem with Baker because they're in a conference where they should have played 9 games. Instead, they only played 6, and one of those games should have been against Grandview.
Yes, and the teams that they ended up playing, there's touting, you know, how great their defense was. They've had 3 shutouts this year.
Right.
But again, you have to justify that. There's a little asterisk. Who did you play?
Yeah, the 3 shutouts were against teams who I think you and I could have held out of the end zone.
Those 3 teams have combined for what? 2 wins on the year.
Right.
Because they played each other.
Right. And so, I mean, I think, don't get me wrong, we saw Baker on Thanksgiving. I think that they're a talented team. But also, we don't know what kind of a team Grandview looks like right now. We don't know what kind of a team Baker looks like right now. And we won't know until we at least get to lay eyes on them Saturday. What kind of a team Benedictine is right now, right? Because, again, some of these schools had guys that probably graduated in December. Some of these guys, like Grandview, I'm going to tell you, Grandview's got guys that are going to the league who may or may not still be with the program right now. So, again, that's some of the problem with spring football. I get it that the NAIA just had their backs up against the wall and said, here's what we're going to do. I commend them for early on saying, here's how it's going to be. Here's the day we're starting. Boom. But again, it will change the design of some of these teams and the look of some of these teams.
Yeah, and again, so Benedictine is going to be playing their regular season game on April the 10th. On April the 11th, the NAIA will make the announcement for postseason. And I'm holding out hopes that it's going to be a Ravens and Seahawks game. That would be the best case scenario.
Well, let's go.
let's go to West Palm, huh? Hey, we're going to be back. We've got more things to talk about as Sports Look continues right after this. Good to have you with us on KAIR-FM, Horton Atchison Sports Look. Final segment, final show of the season. And Gus, We've been looking forward to the Royals season. It is drawing close. They're going to be starting this thing very shortly. And as they trim down the roster to make a big move and lock in one of the, not only a great player, and I don't know, I've never considered him a great player, a really, really, really good player. Not sure he's a great player, but he's a fan favorite, and he's a guy that you need on your team because he is that kind of a guy, Salvador Perez.
So when you're talking about the pantheon of Royals players, he's not in it?
No.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. It's one of those players that
better,
I don't...
Better catchers for the Royals than Salvador Perez?
Absolutely nobody.
Daryl Porter?
Not a chance.
Buck Martinez?
No.
Well, there you go.
I mean, I'm just saying that Salvador Perez,
I guess
on his very first ballot, will go into the Hall of Fame.
Really?
He'll be one of the best catchers, right? And he's starting to figure out the bat, right? He's won, what, two or three consecutive Silver Sluggers. Again, I just, like, other than maybe Yachty, there's been no catcher since that's better than Salvi right now.
Okay.
I mean, I just don't. And I get it that there were some of those older players that were, but again, I just think Salvador's probably, you know, going to be one of those numbers that you look out there and see.
I think Salvador's a great catcher, good catcher, really good catcher.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think he's been very solid. I think he's been good for the team. He's been good for the city. He's been good for the organization. You know, and they brought him up, and he's been a lifer. You know, I mean, all of those things. You know, in the Frank White and Alex Gordon, you know, kind of a thing where, you know, guys start through and come through and stay there from now on.
Right.
And so all of that, props to him and props to the organization for being able to make that happen. But, you know, the Salvi splash may be what he's best ever going to be remembered for.
No. Right?
Okay.
Like one of the most iconic plays, okay, in Royals history.
Uh-huh.
Ready?
I'm waiting.
The wild card game where he shoots it up the third base line and the Royals come back and beat the A's, right? That is probably right up there as one of the top three plays in Royals history.
It would be up there.
You know, I mean, that's that game where they got way behind in the playoff game, and then Salvi comes up in a terrible swing, off balance, one-handed.
See, and there's my problem.
Rolls it, though, between the third baseman and the bag. Right?
What I have always told you, always.
Luck will.
Luck will always beat skill.
Yeah.
And but anyway, it's good to see him on the team,
yeah,
and he's going to be good for him.
And again, though, a lot of money.
His team healthy.
A lot of money, but yeah, I mean, he's healthy. I think that 1 year missing because of his Tommy John surgery probably saved his body a little
bit.
But
I think that was been a little injury prone.
A little bit. I mean.
And don't get me wrong, it's a tough position to not get hurt.
Yeah, and I think he's one of those kind of that has that old school mentality of, like, catchers now. If you look in the minor leagues, like an MJ Melendez, who will probably be the heir apparent to Salvador one day, these are guys that catch no longer 6-7 days a week. Guys are now catching 5 days a week, maybe 4 days a week. I mean, that's why you're seeing a lot more platoon catcher situations.
In the day, of course, you would catch 6 days a week. The only day you would get off is if you had a Sunday matinee after Saturday night.
Yeah.
And you would let your two catcher probably come in and do Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that was the only time if you were the guy behind the plate, if you were Thurman Munson.
Yeah.
Thurman wanted to be back there, okay?
Right. And I think that, you know, I think Salvador wants to be out there. So, again, it's a big deal for the Royals, especially since that's $82 million. Hard to believe in today's baseball that $82 million is the most the Royals have handed out to any player.
They are turning down the roster. BWJ is out.
Yeah, and the problem with that is now it sounds like, he's maybe just a September call-up, right? Which, I get it that if the Royals start winning a lot of games and they need to bring him up and help for a playoff run, but the problem with that theory or that mentality is, if you're making a push like that, obviously somebody's playing really good. So who are you going to get him out there to replace? I think listening to Dayton Moore the other day, he was talking about the one thing they want to see out of Bobby Witt this year in the minors is play a whole bunch of positions, right? Like, they understand his bat is there. They want to see him play a little outfield, play a little second, play a little short, possibly even some third, and just kind of kind of get a feel for where the kid wants to play.
Have you ever seen a Major League Baseball team with, you know, with some talented guys who is so absolutely uncertain what position they play? They are constantly saying, maybe you should bring Merrifield in to play second, or maybe to play short, or maybe to play third, or maybe to play first, or maybe to play the outfield. And then you're doing the same with your shortstop, your third baseman, second baseman. They are playing musical chairs with guys. This is a team of no position players.
Well, you know the problem is, ever since Dayton Moore got here, he has wanted a corner outfielder, right? Every trade feels like when they got Soler, oh, we got a corner outfielder. He has a mindset that he wants a corner outfielder. The problem is, you've never really had that player, so you just continue trying to play people there, right? Hunter Dozier a couple of years ago moved from third to right field. It just didn't fit moving back to third. They've talked about moving Mondi to center. Right now, Witt worked on his arm all offseason. He's going to play right field. Again, it's just a little confusing. And can I tell you the one player I feel bad for this season? Andrew Benintendi. Okay? He's a guy that the Royals got from Boston. I think he's going to be a good player. He's young. I say young. He's 26. But yesterday, he had one problem. Okay? Against the Angels, runner on second, one out, ground ball to left field. Okay? Angels send him. Benintendi came up. His throw was late. I mean, even you heard Ryan. He's like, you're so ingrained that a ball to left field, that runner's out at the plate. Like, and it's never even going to be close.
Gordon is not
like,
there anymore.
But without Alex Gordon there, like, everybody's going to say Gordon would have made that play. Mm-hmm. Right? Whether it's a catch at the wall or it's a throw to second or a throw to home. I mean, teams are going to challenge him a little bit, and every outfielder isn't going to make that play.
And Gordon's another guy, though, that was not an outfielder.
Nope, third baseman, and you move him out to left field. So, but yeah, I kind of feel bad for Adam Benintendi this year. So,
and the problem I've got is, I bet Bubba makes the doggone roster.
Yeah, maybe, right?
Ugh. Okay, well, anyway, the Royals are going to have opening day with the Rangers April 1st, so it is almost here. What also is almost here is the NCAA tournament's next round. What's not there, many Big 12 teams, many Big 10 teams, a lot of the people you thought were going to be there are not. Every bracket in America was broken by day two.
Yeah, but you know who is going to be there?
Sister Jean.
Sister Jean. At 101 years old and Chicago's Loyola Chicago. Now makes it into the Sweet 16. You know, Abilene Christian was a good story a little bit, but this is kind of fun. Oral Roberts, the other day I heard Colin Cowherd, not even really sure where Oral Roberts was located. And I'm screaming at the radio, Tulsa, but, you know, it's kind of fun. Especially now, there are a lot of low seeds left in this tournament, so, yeah.
Which is just going to make them easy pickings for the Baylors of the world.
You would think, right?
You'd think.
A lot of people are, and me included, kind of going into that Elite Eight game. I think that if USC can knock off Oregon, I think USC is maybe the only team that matches up well with Gonzaga.
We're going to see how it all shakes out. NCAA tournament continues, and wrapping it up with the NFL draft, they are going to be doing that in a different format. But again, that's going to be here in a month.
All right, here we go. Last chance to put it out there on paper. What does Kansas City take with the 30th overall pick, or do they even pick at 30?
If they cannot get some kind of a deal made, which I suspect that's what they're going to try to do, if, in fact, they have the 30th
pick. Are they going to try to move up, down?
Oh, they'll move down.
Okay.
No question about it, mm-hmm. I think. And if they don't get that deal made, and if they pick number 30, I don't think there's any question they're going to go on the defensive side, probably somewhere corner to safety.
Yeah, see, and I've seen, what's crazy is I've seen a lot of cornerback mocked to them lately in the draft pick.
I don't think there's any question.
See, and I think continue to build pieces for Patrick. I think O-line? You get him another toy and get him one more receiver. I really do. I think it's... Honestly, put it down. I think it's going to be Tooney out of Florida, another 4-2 guy.
Is McCole Hardeman on this team next year?
Yeah, but it'll be the last year of his rookie deal. They won't pick up the fifth-year option, and then he'll be done.
Hey, we want to thank our Sportsbook sponsors. They've been with us through the season. They have been wonderful. Gerber Electric, Immuner's Lock Room, Exchange Bank, Skyway Vapes, Taco John's. Upcoming scheduled again, Ravens football here on CARE Radio, April the 10th. Tune us in as Benedict is going to be up at Wilcox Stadium. Gus, anything else before we kick it out of here?
Nope, it'll be football season before you know it.
Thank you all for sharing a season to remember with us. And until next time, for Gus Kautz, Tom Kautz, so long, everybody.